Welcome to Blurbs! If you like birds, if you like knowledge, then my friend, you find yourself in the right place. Hi, I'm Matt, bird enthusiast from New Zealand. Let's get into it. Diddly papa da, diddly do, daddly papa da. Before I became a bird enthusiast, I was a physiology enthusiast, an interest I discovered while at university. I liked to read books that summarized the history of a given human body topic. A standout I remember was on the history of cardiac medicine, called The Heart Healers. Then the topics began to broaden. I read a book on the mathematics behind gambling, the history of forensic science, and many more. And then one day, I came across the autobiography of Charles Darwin. An autobiography. Now this was really getting away from the genre where I'd started. But this book, this tale of events and how important they were for our understanding of the natural world, captivated me, just like I know it has for countless others. And looking back, this probably planted the seed, or more aptly, laid the egg, for becoming the avian enthusiast that I am today. I'll admit, I then tried to read On the Origin of Species, but the old-timey language was a bit much for my brain to enjoy. But never fear! I have redeemed myself. I've read research papers primarily from 2018 onwards to get the most up-to-date perspective on what the finches that Darwin discovered teach us. And boy, has it changed my understanding. Diddly-bop-a-da, diddly-doo, daddle-diddly-bop-a-da. The Galapagos Archipelago is a group of 14 major islands located approximately 1,000 kilometers from the coast of South America. They've been around for the last 4 to 5 million years, and it is here that Charles Darwin visited in 1835, collecting the information that would later prove useful for piecing together the theory of natural selection and evolution. As we all know, this information centres around the endemic finches, Darwin's finches, as they are collectively known. There are now recognised to be 18 species that have developed within the last 1 to 2 million years. Superficially, they look very similar, with brown to black plumage, but they differ in body size, song, and most importantly, beak shape. Their beaks are famously adapted to each be optimal for a different dietary specialization. These specializations range from eating seeds of differing sizes and hardness, to utilizing twigs as tools to get insects from hard-to-reach spaces, to even piercing the skin of other birds to drink their blood. Darwin's finches represent the quintessential example of an adaptive radiation. In other words, this is the rapid diversification of morphology and behaviour to fill available ecological niches, all linking back to one common ancestor. Interestingly, one, despite common belief, or at least what I was told as a kid, Darwin's finches don't follow the usual pattern where different species develop on and inhabit distinct islands. Multiple species of Darwin's finches can co-inhabit a given island, and a given species can be found on more than one island. And two, Darwin's finches are not actually finches. They're in the Tanager family, Thraupidae, more specifically, the subfamily, Coerbinae. The common ancestor of these finches, well, I mean tanagers, but I'll call them finches for consistency's sake, may have made its way over from the South American mainland. However, recent evidence suggests that it is equally as likely that it migrated from the Caribbean. Indeed, species in the subfamily Coerbinae do display a tendency to disperse greater distances than other tanagers, thus making a Caribbean origin more plausible. The instinct and ability to travel large distances isn't the only factor that led to these finches immortalizing their space in history, however. Let's talk about what else helped them to do it. Diddly-bop-a-da, diddly-doo, daddle-diddly-bop-a-da. So it was all due to the islands, right? A plethora of untapped ecological niches that Darwin's finches were first to find and utilize. Wrong. It is now thought that the Galapagos mockingbirds arrived on the archipelago before the finches. However, they only diversified into four species. The islands and the habitats they provide certainly had a role to play, but it seems as though there is something extra evolvable about the finches, something intrinsic. You probably know where I'm going with this. It's in their DNA. Birds in the family Coerbinae show a large flexibility in the genetic controls that determine beak structure. A term that has been used for this is high cranial modularity. Their genetics allow for parts of their skull to be changed independently from one another more readily than in other species, thus allowing for the potential creation of a huge number of beak shapes and sizes. Some studies have been able to identify specific loci or areas on a chromosome responsible for this adaptability. The net result is seen as a greater variation in beak shape and size being measured within populations of birds in the family Coerbinae when compared to other closely related species. And variability is key to natural selection. The good old survival of the fittest. Those with favourable variations are more likely to survive, to breed, and pass on those specific genes, thus making them increasingly more common within the population. A greater potential for variation equates to a greater potential to evolve. Thus, it is now thought that it was the precise interplay between the external availability of niches and the intrinsic evolvability of Darwin's finches that allowed for the prolific adaptive radiation that we see today. Not just any old bird could have done what the ancestor of these finches did. This truly is a special example. Now, I mentioned earlier that researching for this episode changed my understanding. And what I meant by that is that I always thought natural selection was this extremely slow thing happening over time that would push an organism in one direction. You need a bigger beak? Well, over many, many, many generations, those with bigger beaks will fare better, reproduce more, and things will slowly shift in that direction, and that direction alone. But that's not it. Darwin's finches show us that natural selection is measurable over a much smaller time frame, and that changes can occur and then be reversed in response to environmental stresses. The Galapagos Islands are an ideal area to observe this in because of a marked variation in climate throughout the year. There is a hot, wetter season from January to May, and a cooler, drier season from June to December. Not only this, but global weather events can exacerbate these climatic changes. El Niño events result in wetter seasons, and El Niña events result in drier seasons. Why is this so important? Well, in wetter seasons, there is more production in the ecosystem, thus leading to greater food availability, whereas the opposite occurs in drier seasons. Let's look at some examples from when times are tougher for the finches. Where harder seeds are what is primarily available, as this is what is produced by the drought-resistant plants. Researchers have looked at the effect of this environmental pressure on two species of Darwin's finches, the medium and large ground finches. When only medium ground finches are present in an area, larger-beaked individuals can more easily crack the harder seeds, thus natural selection creates a shift towards the larger-beaked population. However, in this exact same environment, but where there are also large ground finches present, there is a different effect. Because the large ground finches have the larger and stronger beaks, they outcompete the medium ground finches for these seeds. Thus, natural selection actually causes the beak of the medium ground finch to become smaller over time, to be adapted for a different food niche that large ground finches aren't going for. This brings up two concepts. the first being character displacement, which describes how differences between similar species are accentuated in areas where they coexist, but are minimized in areas where they don't. The second being an adaptive or fitness landscape, describing how the resources available in an environment will each be optimally accessed by a unique combination of traits. This can be conceptualized as the peaks or high points over land. These are the areas that contain the resource. Conversely, combinations of traits that are not optimal can be conceptualized as the valleys or low points. These are the areas devoid of resources. Medium ground finches with larger than average beaks survive and thrive on the mountain where hard seeds are produced when there is no competition. But when they are faced with large ground finches who have beaks perfectly adapted to live in this space, the medium ground finches are forced down into the valley and must migrate to another peak where another resource is available in order to survive. Now, in times of abundant food, there is a flattening of this fitness landscape. Coexisting species of finches will tend to all go for the most available and easiest to access food, regardless of the starting point of their beak morphology. Thus, the pressures driving beak morphology apart are weakened because there is enough to go around. The lack of competition causes a trend towards all beaks becoming more similar. The degree of selection pressure continuously varies through time because the weather and thus food production are variable. The beaks of the finches are in a constant state of flux, changing small degrees over short time frames. In saying this, there is some consistency in the general weather patterns, we discussed the times of year earlier, right? As well as the types of food that are available on the Galapagos. So there are pressures which tie these fluctuations around some level of optimum for each finch species. This means that the beak of a given species may be essentially the same, let's say, 1,000 years apart. It has just had a lot of movement in between. To complicate things further, and another part of my understanding that has been changed, is that closely related species can at times interbreed. The technical term being hybridization. It is thought that hybridization has been important for the formation of at least some of the species of Darwin's finches who have been able to exploit an additional resource peak and thus persist. The degree of hybridization and survival rate of hybrid individuals is another factor that fluctuates depending on the time. Some combinations of environmental factors will favor hybrids, and some won't. I also just wanted to mention that evidence has shown that the evolution of these beaks has at least in part been influenced by their role in thermoregulation. Beaks can be used as an efficient area to lose heat from, as they are not insulated by feathers. Mainly why I wanted to talk about this is that it reminded me of something from Pokemon. There is a toucan Pokemon called Toucanon who can learn a move called Beak Blast, where the beak is heated up to attack the opponent. I always thought it felt out of place until I learned this thermoregulatory information. Pokemon is educational. And finally for this section, I thought it would be cool to briefly touch on the fact that not only do the birds evolve in response to food availability, but the food evolves in response to the birds as well. For instance, because factors such as size, hardness, and presence or absence of defense mechanisms influences how difficult it is for a seed to be eaten, some seeds on the Galapagos are evolving to be harder and have a greater number of larger spikes. The finch meals are of course coming from living organisms, and just like all living organisms, the primary objective is to survive and reproduce. Researchers therefore think there is a co-evolutionary arms race occurring between the finches and their food. Finches are constantly changing to have a suitable beak to meet the demand of a given time, and the food is doing its best to foil that. With environmental changes having such an intimate connection with finch beak shape, it begs the question, are humans and human-caused changes having an effect? The answer is yes. But of course, that's just the tip of the beak. Iceberg. The Galapagos Islands have become increasingly urbanized in recent decades. There are now around 30,000 permanent residents and 250,000 visitors each year. And with humans comes human food. And in the game of life, we tend to go for what's easiest, right? We've heard this today already about the finches. They change their food preference to whatever is most readily available. Indeed, finches in urbanized areas have been shown to prefer urban-based food over natural food sources, and this potentially has massive implications. The human-based food is much less affected by weather fluctuations and thus is in more consistent supply. And what happens when there's an abundance of a certain type of food and thus reduced need for competition between species? That's right, the beak morphologies start to become more similar. Essentially, if urbanization spreads too much, then we may eventually lose some of the distinction between finch species. Permanent changes, like settling on a new group of islands, or having humans make base on your piece of paradise, these don't just create temporary change in morphology like the weather patterns do. These have the potential to create more permanent change, to influence speciation and the course of evolution. The trend of reduced selection pressure and its conforming effect on beak shape seem to have already been observed in some ground finch populations living near human settlement. So in terms of species diversity, urbanization is likely a bad thing. It does, however, seem to help the birds in terms of just generally staying alive because of the greater availability of food. Darwin's finches in urban areas have been found to have a longer breeding season and higher reproductive success, i.e. more chicks that successfully fledge. But what's that old saying, quality over quantity? Researchers speculate that because of a change to an urbanized diet, chicks will not get as much protein as they would from natural sources, which could affect development later in life. A different diet also changes the gut microbiota, which is implicated in an organism's resistance to parasites. Only time will tell whether the net effect of urbanization is good or bad for overall finch numbers. Another downside that is not up for debate is the incorporation of human-related, aka anthropogenic, debris into nests. Human materials such as plastics can cause injury or entanglement to finches. Cases of this causing death have been documented, and research shows these materials are prevalently used in the building of urban nests. Fledgling success has actually been shown to decrease as the proportion of anthropogenic material making up the nest increases. The positives of urbanization for total finch survival must currently be outweighing the negatives, however, due to the greater overall fledgling success mentioned earlier. But should urbanization continue to expand, and let's be honest, that's how it typically goes, this balance may tip the other way. One possibility is that increased infrastructure may reduce suitable nesting sites, thus curtailing any benefits of food availability. Either way, I think urbanization is ultimately bad for Darwin's finches if a reduction in diversity eventuates. We don't want a billion of one finch, we want a healthy population of all 18 amazing types. And on that note, here are the names of the 18 species that have taught us so much about the natural world. Give a warm round of applause for Genovesa groundfinch, Espanola cactus finch, sharp-beaked groundfinch, vampire finch, Genovesa cactus finch, small groundfinch, medium groundfinch, large groundfinch, common cactus finch, small tree finch, medium tree finch, large tree finch, woodpecker finch, mangrove finch, green warbler finch, grey warbler finch, Coco's finch, and the vegetarian finch. And there we have it. You'll find the papers I used for research referenced in the show notes. My goal was to make this the biggest and best episode to date to commemorate the special occasion, that being the 10th episode of the Blurbs podcast. I hope I've managed to do that. And speaking of occasions, I'm wishing you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you again in 2024. Dee 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 dee, Blurbs.